tale story, how the tale grew from almost nothing, grew more than the dog did, and finally, when the dog made an effort to wag, he wagged instead of the tail. Now, I don't wish to criticize or degrade. In fact, I want to use this to emphasize something about schools rather than to downgrade them when I mention the wagging of the dog's tail, because I want it to be impressed on our minds what you hear quite often now: schools are big business. From nothing to foremost in consideration as one of the community's needs, or foremost as one of the objects in its planning, is the important role that schools have come to gain or assume. Looking back, just see where 200 years have brought us. You've come a long way, baby. Where else in this great country of ours could a grower of taters become a commentator? Where else could a poor man become president, the office boy become head of the firm? Where else could the student voted least likely to succeed become an engineer, or coaches become administrators? Let's go back briefly to the beginning, with slight repetition, because I'm interested in the way this is worded, and it ties in a little with figures given later. From a source written in 1903, and relating to figures back beyond that, is this quote. In 1843, it was decided that the children of the settlement should have a school. So some green pine was sawed into lumber, and a small board shanty was built to serve as a schoolhouse. Its location was just east of the river, about where the showboat is stored in the off-season. And Miss Eliza Ann Smith was the teacher, and there were 11 pupils. Now, that's what I mean. The dog's tail started up till those 11. It was nothing, you see. Her salary or pay was by subscription. They suddenly decided they had no money, so they took up sort of a collection to pay her, and I'll venture she didn't get more than 10, maybe even $5 a month. That's the way things were then. Their first commencement was interrupted in this wise. One afternoon during closing time, a heavy rainstorm came up. Supposing it would soon cease, the teacher and pupils decided to wait for it, but it kept pouring and finally poured into the schoolhouse also. When they could no longer find a dry spot to move to, they took their belongings and fled, never to return. Now, in these days, we float bond issues. Back then, they floated the schoolhouses. The next few years are concerned with history of single buildings, from that building to this. I'll skip along over that because time is short. There were a few of them located in different places around the town. But this building became the school in 1917, if I was informed correctly, the gym built in the 30s under WPA during the Depression. Now, from this one building site, in 40 years, from 1917 until now, it's gone from one building to eight. The curriculum and personnel additions have made the same growth in proportion to population, and curriculum added has warranted by this population growth. This first teacher, Miss Smith, she had attended school till she was 14 years old. She taught her brothers and sisters. She was a teacher of these 11 in this school when she was 15. Probably hadn't gone through anywhere near 8 years of school. At 14, she began teaching, or ended her schooling days. The faculty has now gone from that one Miss Smith to 180, the student number from 11 to 3,785 plus 125 adults, and the total personnel from 1 to 300, including drivers, cooks, maintenance people, and noon hour supervisors. Now, this growth has not been just in buildings and numbers. The change in professional requirements has kept pace with the growth in school population, from no training and hardly an eighth grade education as a requirement for teaching. We've gone through the stages of eighth grade and then a certificate, a six-week certificate, a first grade certificate, second grade certificate, two-year life first, a three-year life, a bachelor's degree for 4 years' work, a master's for five, an education specialist for six, and now in many positions such as a head of the school system or any administrative position, some systems require a seven-year training and a PhD, a doctorate. This trend and change has also shown itself in the relations between the public and the faculty and between the students and the faculty. Teachers are now more a part of the community than they used to be. They used to be considered transients more. I hope I don't sound prejudiced, but that's the way it was, I think. We were expected, or it seemed they hoped, that we would move on after 2 years. That's way back when, you know. They would ask questions like, where do you live? And you don't expect to buy a home here, do you? And so on. Now teachers take part in politics. They own their own homes. They pick a spot they want to live and try to get in that spot. They have tenure. They build their career here. They have a salary schedule, and they have fringe benefits. They can even live out of town if they want to. They're not required, as they were in some school systems, I don't know about this one, to stay in town 3 weekends out of four, or they were not told which church to attend. Student-teacher relations likewise have changed. Students now are protected by codes and rights. The classes are student-centered now rather than a dictatorial or teacher-centered type of class. And the teachers and students, and this is good, the way it should be, teachers and students tend to rather live together rather than I'm the teacher and you're the student. There has been much extracurricular enrichment. Students and teachers socialize and have person-to-person relationships or live on that basis. They share sports and won and lost records and love to look at the trophies which the teams have won. Discipline and discipline methods, too, have changed. Now things are talked over and reasoned about more. It's a far cry from some of the old methods. It might be called from hickory stick to noodle. In the old times, the teacher had a woodshed or the principal had an office, and when he collared a student and told him they were going on a whaling expedition, he wasn't talking about fishing. Sophistication of children has also been on the rise. As you must know, following society's trend, students now know more about more things than they used to. Not long ago, a six-year-old student skinned his knee when he fell from the step. He came in to the teacher whimpering, and she tried to pacify him, and she said, just lay your head against me and have a good cry. He says, cry? Nuts. He says, somebody's going to get sued for this. We have been through stages such as the three R's, the word method, the story method, self-discipline, student government, clubs, and many extracurricular activities, public relation programs, report cards, no report cards, parent-teacher conferences, modular form of organization, round-the-table classes, contract method, unititis, visual aids, audio aids, audio-visual aids, field trips, new math, adult education, emphasis on exceptional children, emphasis on the handicapped child, emphasis on the gifted child, emphasis on the slow-learning child. For a while, we educated the whole child, and now we're in a period of quality education. To supplement the old three R's, we now furnish books and pencils and papers more than ever before, other supplies. We clean up after the children. We entertain them in school, provide them with outside activities, even beyond the length of the school year. We counsel them on problems of health, education, and vocations, and social problems and love affairs. We help them look to extended schooling and ultimate job opportunities. We supervise shared time for earning opportunities and on-the-job experience and training. We feed them and we transport them to and from school. One educator predicted not too many years ago that suggested that the school year should be extended the school day should be extended to 6 days, the school week, and 12 months a year, and that there should be sleeping quarters for the students on the school property. The turning point in this school system, you may realize this, and I may be wrong, but in 1939, the Board of Education, either by intent or by accident, hired a man named Edward Dietzel as superintendent. Now, Mr. Dietzel was loaded with the gospel of centralized schools and transportation, and other boards and administrators, of course, followed in his footsteps. But the importance of the timing at that time he was hired becomes important when we realize that the transportation system, instituted when it was, makes it a fact now that we have 180 square miles in our school district instead of 7. If others had gotten their foot in the door early, instead of Chestnut, we might not have even half the size area we serve now. The Fonger School was first to transport here in 41, the first annexation in 1957. Harry Adams drove the first bus in 1940 over poor roads, a long route, a poor bus, and $30 a month. In 1942, we had 3.5 buses. The half was a Ford station wagon that went out northwest of town with 12 to 15 riders. They called it the sardine can. The students who rode in it said they felt like heels because they needed a shoe spoon to get in with. In 1942, there are 50 buses and 4 spares. I have another name for them, but that will suffice. In 1942, there were 18 on the staff, with a total payroll of $30,000. Now that's for the year. The secretary of the board at that time even wrote the paychecks and kindly brought them up to school to pass around. The superintendent taught one class, the principal 3. We had one janitor, one office helper, one desk telephone. Now, I should not want to close without making mention of Our Lady School in connection with Chestnut's educational background. This school was opened in 1905 and with different buildings and additions, so on, high school in 23. High school discontinued just recently. Joining or sending pupils to the public school, but there is a grade school there with a new building built in 1956, housing grades 1 to 8, and having 195 enrolled. In fact, this school has made a sizable contribution to the number of high school graduates in Chestnut over the years. And one more might be overlooked fact, Our Lady and this school district were mutually benefited by the rise or the rise and beginning of this transportation system here, because they paid in dollars to ride, as did the public school riders, paid their own way on the buses. It helped the bus transportation system to grow to where it could serve a larger area. As it served a larger area, more and more pupils came to Our Lady School as well as to the public school. In conclusion, and speaking as an individual now, I'm glad to have been here during these years and to have been to have seen so much a part of this growth firsthand. It has been nice to have you in a very small part in what was happening during the 33 years that we have been here. Vera and I retired in 1969, and since that time many other improvements have been made. And now, if that sounds funny, this was stated a little more clearly in the Chestnut Argus. The year-end issue, you know, they used to put out a year-end issue, review the community activities and so on during the year. The last issue of the 69 year, under a headline across the top, headline said, Community Improvements During 1969. There, about halfway down the fourth column, it said, Vera and Ray Ellis retired from the Chestnut school system after 27 years. Thus was our contribution made, and so ends this tale of a tale.
I can assure you, Ray, we still miss you up there. Thank you very much.